Here we are. Here we go with the John Curley, Sherry Elliger show. Teeny tiny right over there. She is so excited. 2 days away from the final votes coming in for Employee of the Week, going for her 10th victory. They made her sit out last week because too many in a row for Teeny, but she is working the crowd, Sherry. You write to us at MyNorthWest.com. You come on in through the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line at 1-888-973-5476. All welcome, John. Well, campuses all across the United States still allowing protests. You have no problem with freedom of speech. You go around, scream everything you want, kill Jews. You can say that as much as you want. That's fine if you believe that. It's a good idea. But you can't be involved in violence. And that's the difference. So when you start smashing windows and start breaking into buildings, you're not supposed to do that. Well, now you've broken the law. So the law stepped in, arrested a bunch of people there at Columbia. They got those guys. How many were arrested altogether? Like, was it 300 or something like that?
Between Columbia and City College of New York. They were kind of in each other's spaces a little bit, and one would go to the other. But the police got about 300 off of both of those campuses. There was also a violent night at UCLA.
Did you watch that video?
Yeah.
Yeah, so a bunch of protesters that, you know, we are Hamas and we love your missiles and all that other stuff. Those are the signs that the media doesn't show you, the chance they don't want you to know. But so a bunch of these kids set up there, and I guess I don't know how many of them were students at UCLA, thought, oh, we're going to just go in there. It started, I saw a video of this young student from UCLA. He's standing there, and you see these kids that are blocking him. He's also he's a kid too, right? I mean, they're all college kids. And they're blocking him, right? They're standing there. They've got the masks on, and, you know, they're all concerned. They look scared, these little people there. And he goes, I'm trying to get in there. I'm a student. I pay the tuition. I'm going to try to walk in. So he lifts his hands in the air, and he goes, I'm just trying to walk by them. And they're doing the little thing where they're blocking him and, you know, not really saying anything, but somebody's videotaping it. So that video came out. And then at night, a bunch of people decided, okay, well, we're going to go there and let's have at it. So they tore down some of the barricades, and the protesters ended up fisticuffs between the one group and the other group, and a bit of a melee happening at UCLA. I don't know if there was any arrest there, but it turned into a UCLA protest brawl. And here are the sounds of the fighting. This is what it sounds like if you're two students going at it.
Police, chill! Hey, chill, don't, bro! Hey, chill!
Do they know who's involved in that? Were they people from in town? They're all students going to that at UCLA?
I think they said they were counter-protesters, so it could have been outside groups as much as the protesters are from outside groups, but they didn't specifically name anybody. There's a whole list in the Wall Street Journal of how many days these protesters have been on certain campuses. And the first one is Tufts, which you haven't heard anything about, really. So clearly they're not having any real violence. Then there's Yale, Columbia, Harvard, USC, Cal Polytech, University of Michigan, Swarthmore, Indiana University, University of Minnesota. I mean, just the list just goes on and on and on as far as how many people are still on those campuses. Brown University, and I can't remember, maybe it was Boston or something, they agreed to sit down and have a debate about these protesters wanting them to divest in.
Yeah. Learn some economics on that one. You can't divest from these institutions. They
learn
can't.
Some economics. What are they
exactly. How do you divest? So then the institution's going to sell the stock that they have. That means somebody else buys it. And if you're selling it, somebody's buying it. So then you're just transferring the ownership of the stock. You're not divesting. The money will still benefit Israel. So you're not really doing anything. You're taking some money away from the institutions. But really, you think that's going to help in any way? I guess they're not really learning any economics. This is the problem, I think, comes in when somebody teaches you what to think, not how to think. And I'd seen this story from advocates for Jewish Americans were talking about this stuff starts really early, not just in college, but prior to it. There's a school in Shoreline, and a video was found that they were teaching these kids, playing these videos for kids in elementary school. You see these young kids protesting from the river to the sea, you know, Palestine will be free, basically all of the chants. And they were showing it to the kids, like elementary school kids, to explain that, oh, the people there in Gaza, you know, are being colonialized and suppressed and, you know, murdered by Israel and the Jews. You're showing that to elementary school kids. And I watched the video that they showed them, and it's all little kids that are cheering and screaming about, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, but nothing else about anything of the complicated history of that part of the world. So obviously, when you start at a school like that one, that elementary school in Shoreline, you start them early enough and you get them into high school, and then you fill the rest of their heads with all this. And then when we get into college, what do you expect, right? And the fact that they can spread all this stuff through social media and show up, and obviously somebody is giving them the money so they can get brand new tents, because if you don't have any money for school or food or whatever else, you're a bunch of starving kids paying $83,000 or $88,000 a year at Harvard or Columbia. Somebody's buying the tents for you. Why? Who's behind it? What's the money behind the whole thing?
Well, some of them were actually really complaining because they had to shut down the dining hall. And they were saying, the protesters were saying, do you want us to get dehydrated? Do you want us not to get food? So they not only wanted to protest and possibly create some violence, but they want, of course, you need to be fed, because right. you don't have the energy then, do you, to put up your tent right. and protest yeah. and do all of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I saw the woman saying, do you want students to die of dehydration? Mm-hmm. And then somebody, one of the reporters said, are they stopping food from getting in? Well, I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard, but, you know, this is 19, was it 68 or something? The campus that were, may have been prior to 68. Ronald Reagan, governor of California, dealing with all the protests that were happening on college campuses. And again, all in for the First Amendment, that's fine. But when you start to take over the campus and you're destroying the property of the campus, and Ronald Reagan in a press conference, this is from, what year was this, Jill? Like 64, 65, somewhere.
I don't know.
I don't think that taking to the streets and rioting and disorder has ever solved anything or ever will.
I would like to propose that the issue is that on the campuses, you who are adults, you who are entrusted with those young people and their guidance, have a responsibility to make it plain to them from the very beginning that you yourselves do not tolerate the kind of conduct that has led to the burning of Wheeler Hall, that has led to two murders on the campus of UCLA.
You've created an atmosphere on the campus where no one wants to listen. No,
you
no
are a liar.
Listen to.
Now, don't you That's talk about immediate. Political speeches. Don't you make a call.
Those people told you for days in advance that if the university sought to go ahead with that construction, they were going to physically destroy the university.
Now, why did you negotiate many times?
Negotiate? What is to negotiate? What is?
The university is a public institution.
That's right. But the university,
its own community, and for the community of Berkeley that live around it.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
Boom! Ronald Reagan. Austin, University of Texas, UT down there, they were like, we're not going to have any of that. Boom! Gather them up, pick them up, throw them in jail. You can protest, First Amendment, that's fine, but you can't block other students from going to class. You can't break windows and go into buildings and stand around and then cry that no one's giving you any pizza. But the problem is the administrators themselves are sympathetic, right? Whereas Columbia faculty came forward, like 1,100 of them signed some letter saying that if you suspend these students or in any way you discipline them, you know, you're going to have to deal with us. Well, we know that the faculty and we know that the presidents of these organizations are sympathetic to the cause because they too have also been brainwashed with DEI garbage, that Jews are white and they're oppressors and they're colonizing and they're destroying the poor, innocent people. I mean, Hamas, terrorists. So, you know, you can even bring into question. Remember right after October 7th, different professors were saying, well, you know, yes, maybe, you know, maybe somebody, I don't know how many, I don't think people got raped or what were they doing or, you know, they deserved it. Remember that? All those different professors that were coming forward questioning whether or not, were they really being killed at some rave or something? And if so, well, you know, if we lose a few here or there, well, it's, you know, it's only, it's an oppressor. So it's part of the battle for the freedom of the people of Palestine.
Yeah, you know, AOC came out today, or yesterday, I guess it was, and had a tweet that said something like, if one student gets harmed during these police interventions, it's on you, Mayor Adams. It's, you know, this whole thing about she's on the side of the protesters. And today in the White House briefing, the press secretary says that, you know, was asked, why hasn't Biden come forward on this? Why hasn't he said anything? And all she could say was, you know, he's monitoring it. He's monitoring it. And if you're monitoring it, why aren't you doing something? Why aren't you saying something?
Well, right. But it's the same group that never said anything. So when Trump was president and you had everyone going around rioting and killing and setting things on fire during the Black Lives Matter terrorism that happened for months on end, and the Democratic National Convention not mentioning once anything about any of that stuff because they didn't want to say anything because those are their voters or their constituents or that's an ideology they believe and they needed to foment in order to make sure that all of that violence and stuff, that stink was hanging around Donald Trump. It worked. You know, this is one of the reasons. But yeah, Joe Biden can't say anything because he doesn't want to lose Minnesota and he doesn't want to lose all the extreme, you know, socialists on the left that he's hoping will vote for them. So, hey, I'll forgive your college loans and I won't say anything about you stopping other students from going to college because you are anti-Semitic. So Joe does the kind of shuffle on, well, you know, there's both sides sort of thing. And today he had nothing to do all day except for a 3 o'clock meeting or some sort of Zoom call he was on. He's not saying anything because he doesn't want to. So you know, that's what you end up with. And the story is coming out of MSNBC that Donald Trump can't stay awake while sitting there.
Really quickly, if I can, Lisa, your observations on Donald Trump today.
Sleeping. Again,
sleeping.
You know, they have tried a number of different devices. Yeah, sleeping for a lot of it. I would say they've tried a number of different devices to keep Trump awake. Partially in response, or what appears to be in response to collective press corps observations. So, for example, when there are sidebars, an attorney doesn't leave his side anymore because leaving him alone means leaving him to potentially sleep. He has a stack of papers with him at all times now to go through. But neither of those things seem to have protected Trump from his own exhaustion today. More than not, when I looked up to see how Trump was receiving the testimony, Trump was not receiving it at all because his eyes were closed.
I want to make a differential. Yeah. We don't know if he's sleeping. His eyes are sometimes closed. It could be because he's trying not to react. It could be because he's listening. We have seen him at times sleeping. But I think at times today he was also, especially when Keith Davidson got up, he was, I thought, in times attentive to the testimony, and he was popping mints into his mouth. So I think, you know, it depends, given, I think, who's up and where we are in the testimony.
I will now. I would say the morning did not hold his interest.
Yeah.
That's safe.
When she said devices, I was thinking, what do they have, like a cattle prod or, so many devices.
Smelling
to keep them
salts. Smelling salts. Sitting there. We know it's cold, and they won't let him drink his Diet Cokes. He drinks like 7 of those. No Diet Coke. He can only have water. He's not allowed to go to the bathroom until the judge lets him go. So he gets a chance to sit in there and have this judge. It's a crazy story. They fined him, $1,000 mm-hmm. for every one of the times he has, violated the gag order, which reminds me of a great story of Reggie Jackson. So Reggie Jackson was late one day to practice. No, you haven't heard this. So George Steinbrenner's mad and goes to Billy Martin, you know, can't have Reggie Jackson showing up late. So Reggie Jackson standing there, and Billy Martin says to him, yeah, you're late. I'm going to fine you $100. So Reggie Jackson reaches into his pocket, and he pulls out $300, and he says, here, here's $300. I'm going to be late for the next 3 days. Power move. That's what Trump should do. Hey, you know what? $1,000. Here's $5,000. So just I'm going to violate your gag order again. So here's $5,000. I'll just pay forward a little bit extra money for you.
He I think he even said something yesterday about the judge, in spite of the gag order. So he's not slowing down.
Yeah, $1,000.
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah, you should hand him some. Wake up and hand him $5,000. Here we go. John Curley, Sherry Elliger Show, and I'm going to head over to Bucky's Auto Service Center. Sherry, they've got 60 locations, been around for 53 years. That's where I'm going to take my, or 54 years, take my car over there. I waited until they turned 54 to make sure they knew what they're doing. Of course, they always do at Bucky's Auto Service Center. Okay. Grizzly Bear is, they're going to release, eventually they got to capture them, catch them, and then relocate them, to the great state of Washington, let them go in the Cascades. So then we thought we'd, found the story of this guy in Utah. I didn't know they had them there in Utah, but, he is, Joe writes, Utah man regales us with stories of what it's like to survive a grizzly bear attack.
This is sad.
And, the bear or the guy?
Well, the poor guy. Tough. I mean, he really got beat up bad. Poor Graham died alone.
Bear got Graham?
No, okay. No, he's alive, but really.
I thought you'd be mad. I think you'd be sad for the bear, that the bear didn't get a good meal.
Graham died alone.
No, I mean, this man didn't, I mean, what the injuries were terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. So this is the guy, what was like, good setup to the story.
Last time Rudy was here in Salt Lake, he was drawing on a whiteboard because he couldn't speak, and he still carries around his box of tissues for the drool, but that doesn't stop him. He certainly has a lot to say. You know, he was here in Salt Lake earlier this week for another surgery on his jaw, and considering that he almost lost his life, he now has a new take on it.
I'm very fortunate to be alive.
Last September, Rudy Norlander rented side-by-sides in Big Sky, Montana to a father and son who shot a deer. And the very next day, Rudy went out into the forest to help them track it down.
I got into the trees about, maybe 500 feet, and I jumped a small grizzly there, probably its first year out on its own.
That little bear ran away, and from that point on, Rudy had his gun out and ready. He eventually met up with the father and son, and they spread out to search for the deer.
It's like I stepped over a log, looked to see where George was, and there the deer was coming at me already.
Rudy pulled the trigger on his .38 caliber revolver, but it misfired, and the grizzly bear grabbed Rudy by the face.
I remember him getting me by the jaw and taking me up off the ground. And I could see George running towards me, and I said, help me.
Rudy says the entire attack didn't last that long.
And then he bit harder, and he took off my lower jaw, and I probably fell to the ground. That's probably when he stepped on my chest and bit my leg.
And he believes his body immediately went into shock.
I felt the crunch and heard the crunch of the break in my jaw. That I didn't feel him bite me or anything else.
The father and son were able to scare the bear away as Rudy started to get weak while waiting for the chopper, but he never let the worst enter his mind.
Just thinking the other day that I don't think there's any point that I thought I wasn't going to make it.
And through it all, Rudy has had an amazing sense of humor.
I knew he had me by the jaw. I knew he had done something to my face. And I said, you know, that's my money maker. Don't touch that.
Doctors who had never worked on a grizzly survivor took a bone from his leg and a skin graft from his arm to reconstruct his jaw.
So what's it like having part of your leg in your jaw?
Who knew he had stairs hearts?
I missed two of his jokes. I'm sorry.
He said, that's my moneymaker. Don't mess it up. Talking about his face.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, God.
What a brave guy.
Yeah, and he still has a really good attitude about everything. I guess you just count your blessings that you're still alive. Very rare grizzly bear attacks. We went to Manitoba and covered Halloween in Manitoba. And the people there, because the polar bears come out, and polar bears are not afraid of anything. Nothing scares a polar bear. So the kids go out and they go trick-or-treating, and they'll have one cop car in front of them and one behind them. Sometimes they put one to the right and left, and they form a big pack of kids, and they go from house to house, and they go trick-or-treating, and the cops are there with their rifles and stuff as the kids go from house. And the only rule is they're not allowed to be dressed like a bear, which seems like a pretty good idea. Don't dress like a polar bear or any kind of bear. So all the kids go trick-or-treating up and down these streets, these frozen solid streets, and just up above the town, the little town of Manitoba, where these kids were trick-or-treating, we saw like three polar bears just standing on their hind feet, kind of looking down there like, just watching them. And the guy even said to us, you see that? There's a bear there. There's one over there. You know, they're just kind of looking around for something to eat. Not a Snickers bar, but a kid. But doesn't stop the people there in that town from, you know, taking the precautions and knowing, well, we're going to go on with our life. And these polar bears, you know, are very hungry and absolutely fearless. But that's part of life there. It's crazy, huh?
Yeah, crazy. I don't know that I could make it.
Oh, you'd be fine, because the bears would understand how sympathetic you are to all of their causes and all of their concerns. Like the Japanese. Joe put in here, what is this, lion cub encounter?
Lion couple encounter.
Did you slip that one in there? Oh, that's the other one, yeah. Let's get to that one, because that's kind of racy. So a group of tourists are partaking in a South African safari. And I guess when the two cats happened to see the tourists, they got all kind of randy and kind of lost their mind and figured, well, you know what? We don't mind. If you don't mind us doing it, and we don't mind you watching, so.
Well, what made it even a little worse was that they were on top of the vehicle.
Sorry, please,
they were.
I'm trying to watch this. Ooh. Not much of a plot, but those sex-rated films never do.
Yeah, they just got
pizza. Oh, wait, the one line shows up as the plumber. Wow, Joe, this is really thrilling video. Is sound anyway. So what was that? What? So they got a chance to watch them make new babies, new big cats, huh?
No, not really, because they were on top of the vehicle. So what they were able to feel, I guess, was just a lot of shaking side to side.
Oh, no, it's like a fenced-in vehicle. So it's just like, you know, rebar or something. So they could see right above them and you know, they could have fur or whatever.
So they made it in the 9-foot. The 9-foot club instead of the mile high club, the two two randy cats on there. The people got video of the whole thing. I got the story. I saw something the other day on Instagram, and it was this female lion, I guess. I think it was a female lion, comes into the van that they're in, open van, and just starts like nuzzling with everybody. Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah.
Am I the only one that spends 20 hours a day on Instagram and is like watching this, and the cat is like rubbing its, you know, face on these people, like
don't trust that,
going over to another person. What?
Don't trust them. I mean, you never know. Right, they could be all nice. I mean, it's like a bad boyfriend. I mean, they could be all really nice and sweet and snuggly, and then you turn your head and your jaw's off.
Okay. People sharing this data. All right. Priest in Pennsylvania, sure, he's got an addiction to something, and it's, the law has stepped in. He's got a lawyer, and he's, pleading not guilty to this, not realizing that he had accidentally spent $40,000 on his addiction. Well, did he say he's not addicted to it?
he sought help for it at one point. I think he's admitted that he's had this problem. I don't know if he's saying that he's overcome it, but at one point he did try to get help because it was too much.
Too much for him.
Mm-hmm.
$40,000. That's stole it from the church. It's a lot of money. And are we going to say what he was addicted to?
Well, let's just say that he was addicted to something that many, many people are addicted
to. Mom, change the station!
Candy Crush. We'll just say it. We'll just say it, Sherry.
All right, all right, all right.
All right, out loud, it's Sherry Candy. He's a good man. He had a little Candy Crush problem.
Well, it wasn't just Candy Crush.
Power or something. No, well, yeah, wasn't.
It was Mario Kart Tour.
Oh, whoa,
well.
whoa. There's more? There's more?
Mom, change the station.
Mario.
Yeah, Mom, change it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mario.
What was he addicted to? Was the other thing?
Well, according to me, Mario Kart Tour. But according to the way it's supposed to be, would be Mario Kart Tour. He used the church credit card to buy these different things. I guess you can buy stuff to help you with your game. And he ended up spending $40,000, but he returned about $8,000 of it. And then he wrote a check for another $10,000, but he was arrested. And he did get out of jail on a $250,000 bail.
Hmm. I think they changed the rules on that. Like, when the kids were really little, they were using my phone or iPad for that Farmville thing.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were like buying cows and buying a bucket or something and buying some wheat. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? Oh, we bought a cow. I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, a stupid game, right? They're playing that game. Then all of a sudden, I was like getting these bills from Amazon, from Apple. And I said, well, this is, it was like $8,000 or something. Like, what is this? So I call, I get in touch with the Apple people. And they're like, oh, that's not us. That's the game. I go, okay. Well, you go to the game. There's nobody at the game. You can't call anybody or write anybody. And like, well, too bad. But because they basically realize that the person's got the phone, but a kid's got the phone, so they're just buying stuff. And I'm like, guys, the cow costs money. And they're like, I know. They get little tokens. I'm like, that's our tokens. That's my money. Yeah, it was the end of that stupid thing. Took that off there. But I think for a while there, nobody cared that kids would do this and spend the money on this thing. I think they've stepped in somehow, and somebody, you can point to somebody and go, hey, I want my money back, or you know, don't let this happen anymore.
Yeah, it's for kids and priests. There should be that safeguard.
Exactly. Are you a Candy Crusher? Or you play that game?
No, I'm not a gamer in any way, except voiceover part. But no. I don't.
Right. Well, don't be so modest. Go ahead. Give us one of your voices from Intergalactica 2 or whatever.
Fallout. It's all the rage these days now with the new TV show.
Yeah, it's a TV show. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And are they going to bring you in for that?
I haven't gotten a call, so I'm assuming no.
Okay, well, because you're on the line right now. Maybe if we check with Nate and clear the line, maybe they're trying to call right now.
Okay, well, I'm willing to
keep that line open. So you can deliver one of your lines.